And we were taught by the Kiyosaki group, if it cash flowed 50 bucks, buy it. Well, ours cash flowed like 300 bucks when we bought it. So it was like, wow, this is awesome. We bought two of them. And, you know, we used equity out of our home. And we just kept expanding from there.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Edna Keefe's journey from single mom at age 16, living in subsidized housing with a daughter in subsidized daycare, to multimillionaire real estate entrepreneur and coach inspires others. Her major operations are long-term buy and hold rental apartment buildings, and her claim to fame is a $75 million real estate portfolio built with other people's money. She's a proponent of education and inspiration, and Edna offers free training with her Real Estate Coaching Fridays and Mindset Monday events on Facebook each week. Edna, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. The pleasure's mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show, which obviously your bio there gives us kind of a quick, overview of like, wow, hey, I want to hear this. But quickly, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Well, you know, we started in 2007, and I used to be a financial advisor. And how we got started was I had clients coming in to take some money out of mutual funds to invest in real estate. And I didn't like that. So I was telling him, why do you want to invest in real estate? That's not a good deal. And then I had one that actually was telling me that he had a portfolio of about 50 doors. And he said, you really should look at it as an alternative investment. So I thought, well, you know what? It makes sense. I respected this guy. He had a good sized portfolio with me. And he was explaining how well his stuff had done over the years. And so I went to a course. We started with a 3-hour evening with Robert Kiyosaki's group. And then we went to a 3-day weekend. And at the weekend, we signed up for the year-long program, which at that time cost us about $27,000 US. And we never looked back. We bought 50 doors within 18 months, where we'd set our goal that we'd get 50 doors. We didn't know 5, 10 years. It just seemed so out there that we couldn't even really pick a time frame. It was like, I don't know, 5, 10 years, we would be happy. And when we hit it in 18 months, you know, Sam, I knew we had something going, and I sold my financial planning practice, went into real estate full time.
Wow. Within 18 months, you did that. You
said, well, I sold it. It took me to the 2-year period. So I sold it September of 2009, but I decided 18 months in, and then it just took me a while to wrap everything up.
Wow. Good for you. So going from someone that says, you know, what is this? Why are you doing that? To that's now my full-time profession.
Yep.
I mean, that's a real believer conversion right there.
Oh, once I understood real estate and just all the opportunities inside of it, it just made so much sense to me. And we'd had, you know, a lot of success already. You know, when we hit our 50th door, we did that by buying a 24-unit apartment building, which we condo converted at the time, just with what was happening in our area. We bought it for $75,000 a door and condo converted and sold it out at $140,000 a door. So that was a big deal for us. And we just seen the writing on the wall, and we could just see all kinds of opportunities from there. And it just made no sense. And, you know, I was earning good money there. I was making over $250,000 a year as a financial advisor, relatively easy business, working about 3 days a week. I had two little kids at the time. And I just could see that it was going to be so much bigger with real estate.
Right, right. Let's talk about the journey before we get too far into where you've gone from 09 to here. Let's talk about the early days journey. I'd love to hear a little bit about that. You know, living in subsidized housing, daughter in subsidized daycare. Like, how did you even get, I mean, because that seems to be a rat race or a hamster wheel, I'll call it, that many people get on and just can't seem to get off of, just because we want to get into all the reasons why. Tell us how you did it.
Well, you know, I was told a lot when I had my first job. I worked at a doctor's office, And I bought a new car, and while I was still living in subsidized housing, and I, you know, liked clothes, I liked going out, I liked doing stuff. And so I got into credit card debt, I think about $2,000. But at the time when I'm making $1,200 a month, it was huge, right? Right. And my family's saying, you know, Edna, you got to learn to live within your means, you know, and that was kind of preached at me. And I started to think about it. And I think I read a book around that time. And I thought, no, you know what? If I want to learn something, I'm going to learn how to be rich. I don't want to learn how to live within my means. Like, you know, it was like, that was a mindset shift for me that I think a lot of people never, ever get. You can study one and be down that path for the rest of your life. I still see people on Facebook and you know, YouTube and stuff preaching being frugal and all this. And I'm thinking, wow, you just don't get it. Or you can study wealth. And I, even the thought of it just seemed more much more fun studying wealth as opposed to studying how to learn to live within my means. So that was the first big mindset shift I had.
Yeah. And you know, that's an interesting one to dig into. I mean, it just because you're right, it's a huge mindset shift. Like, not how do I save money, but or what can I do to not spend money, but what can I do to bring in 3, 5, 10 times more so I don't have to worry about that extra penny I'm not saving. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Wow. So what did you do?
Well, you know what? I was a single mom. So I started taking correspondence courses while I worked at this doctor's office. So everybody around me thought I had the best job in the world because I didn't go to university or anything, but I did land a job at a clinic. So I was working Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. And all my friends were like waitressing and retail and stuff like that. And they just thought I had the cat by the tail. And, you know, for a while I did too. I liked it there. I really liked it. But 8 years later, I was bored beyond tears. Like, I'd go to work every day and thinking, this is my life, you know, and they were good to me. They were good. I liked them. They liked me. But I didn't want to stay there. So I started taking actually correspondence courses because when I was off pregnant with when I had my daughter from school, I took correspondence courses so that I could stay up. So I got an idea of how to do that. And I took accounting courses and secretarial courses so I could do something more than the receptionist I was. And then I took an office administration course, and then I got a job in a real estate office. Didn't think about it, how important it was at that time. And then I got a job as an office administrator. So I was working as an office administrator again. I was there about 8 years, but the last 3 years, I started studying to be a financial advisor. So I was kind of always doing a side hustle, Sam. I couldn't just give up a job and do something entirely different because I had a kid to look after and bills to pay and, you know, car payments and stuff. And so I just always side hustled. And I got my first big break when I did the office administration. I was earning like $45,000 a year when I left there. But it was while I was there, my boss, I started studying being a financial advisor. He set me up to make it an automatic payment plan for everybody to contribute through me into we didn't have a pension. So it was like RSPs and stuff like that. So I had an immediate, like 100 clients. So that's how I got my start in financial advice. And it was such a great start that 3 years later, I left there and went into financial services full time. And a really big jump for me is I had earned 44, I think it was 43,000 the year I left, but I also earned like another 20 as financial advisor. And my manager was trying to tell me to go full time. And that was a big deal for me. I'd only ever done administration work, and to go into sales full time was a big deal. But he said to me, you know what, you could earn 24,000 doing what you're doing here because you got write-offs and stuff and not so much taxes as to make 43,000 as an employee. So I took that jump and I quit and I went full-time. The first year I made 67,000. The second year I made 187,000. And that to me was like huge because it was like, from 1 year to the next, I increased my income by 120,000. In my previous life, I couldn't even have imagined that, you know, I couldn't even have imagined it.
Right. That's fantastic. Yeah. Clearly you've got the drive, you know, to continue to iterate until, you know, you get what you want. So that I think is maybe one of the keys there is just to keep trying. I mean, I can't even track the number of jobs you said, okay, I did this, but I just kept pushing forward.
Yeah. Always forward. Yeah.
Right. Always forward. I love that. You know, let's talk a little bit. One of the things you're known for is creating a 5-year financial freedom plan versus the 20 or even 40 year traditional plan, not 20 year. Let's go 40 year. What is that?
Well, you know, I adopted Robert Kiyosaki's philosophy, which is not that you have to accumulate $1 million and $2 million, which is what I was doing, teaching people when I was a financial advisor, accumulate this big stack of money. And then when you retire, you live off of it.
Right.
And so his philosophy is once your passive income is more than your day-to-day expenses, you're financially free.
Right.
And I love that idea because I thought, yeah, you know what? Once a certain amount of money is coming in every month without actually walking out the door to go to a job, it just frees you up to think. Like, have you ever played Robert Kiyosaki's game, Cashflow 101?
I think so. Cashflow 101 or Cashflow Quadrant. I can't remember which one it is, but yeah.
The book is Cashflow Quadrant, but his game is Cashflow 101.
Okay, yes, I played the game. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in the rat race and you're going around. And then you get out of the rat race by getting the passive income higher than your expenses. And when you're out of the rat race and you flip that board, your sheet that you're writing your stuff on, all of a sudden your paydays are bigger. Your challenges are bigger too, because when you have to pay taxes or get audited and divorce, all this kind of stuff that happens, you can lose bigger, but your paydays are bigger. It's like 200,000. And then you can buy a building that, or a business that pays you 5 and 10,000. And you know what? That's what happens in real life when you're out of the rat race and you don't have to think about that rat race thing that you're going in every day, and you can start, you know, spending some time thinking, spending some time being around like-minded people who are doing what you want to do. When you're in that little rat race, you're stuck with people who think that same way. And so you can't, it's really hard to get out of it. You know, like even when I was first doing stuff on the side, people would say to me like, yeah, who do you think you are? What, you know, sales? You want to be a salesperson? Are you kidding? People hate salespeople. Why would you want to be a salesperson? You know, and I'm thinking, oh, I think that would be fun. And I think there's really good money to be made at it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what does that look like when you say, hey, let's create a 5-year plan? Yeah, I came to you today and I said, Edna, you know, I've got a little bit saved, but not much. Let's make 5-year plan so I can get out of the rat race. What do you tell
them? It's the idea there is to create enough passive income, and we do it through real estate, to cover off those day-to-day expenses so that you can start thinking bigger and better. So, you know, with us, it started with a condo. We bought our condo. It was our very first purchase. And we were taught by the Kiyosaki Group, if it cash flowed $50, buy it. Well, ours cash flowed like $300 when we bought it. So it was like, wow, this is awesome. We bought two of them. And, you know, we used equity out of our home. And we just kept expanding from there. So the plan is, you know, and we fast track it nowadays with my students with going straight into multifamily instead of buying the single family homes. You know, so I have a lot of students, their very first building, like a little eightplex, paying them, you know, $2,500 a month. Well, do a couple of those for the average person out there that earns $60,000 a year. You do two of those, you're out of the rat race.
Right. That's brilliant. How do you teach people to bypass single family and go straight into multifamily?
You know what? It starts with the mindset shift. You know, much like I had years ago when I said, I don't want to study how to live within my means. I want to study how to get wealthy. It's along the same lines. A multifamily is no harder to buy than a single family. The only reason people think so is because they already, I was in the same boat. I remember we had bought a few houses and I said to my realtor one year, I said, you know, we're going to buy 20 houses this year. He said, Edna, why don't you just buy a multifamily? And I said, oh, I can't. I don't own enough houses, you know, monopoly money. I don't know what I was thinking. And he said, yeah, of course you can. And I said, okay, tell me more. So I sat in his office and I listened to him. And I said, you know what? That makes sense. I said, do you have any for sale? He says, matter of fact, I'm just listing one today. He said, I'll hit MLS tomorrow. And I said, well, what'll it take for me to get under contract so it doesn't hit MLS tomorrow? And he said, a full price offer. And I said, write it up. I did the offer before I left his office, and we got the offer accepted because it was a full price offer. That was the one I told you we paid $75 a door, and we sold them out at $140 a door for as condos.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. So your business today, you have grown both your personal holdings as well as the coaching side of things. Let's talk a little bit about how you've grown your portfolio and whether or not that investing strategy, I know you said you've invested, you know, you bought your first multifamily building. We just heard that. But how has it grown, you know, from that period till now?
Well, we've mostly stuck with the buy and hold strategy. Our favorite strategy is to buy a building that's underperforming, maybe needs renovating, tired management, tired owners, and go in and do our magic and get it up to snuff, fix up the property, increase the rents, and then refinance, pay our investors out, and then hold it long term for long term cash flow. And mortgage pay down, like mortgage pay down is huge. We're at a point where we're making over $30,000 a month just a mortgage pay down alone. And that's another Kiyosaki philosophy I adopted and love, which is buy assets that somebody else pays off for you.
Right.
You know, so I love that asset. So that's our main way. Although we have bought turnkey properties where we just, you know, move in, take over, and it's cash flowing from day one. We have bought a few like that. But the best way for us is to have to go in and value add.
Got it. And what is there a particular unit size or anything you guys are looking for?
You know, when we started out, they were all smaller, but our last purchase was 178 units. We bought in Memphis, Tennessee, and very, very undervalued. But the sellers were forced to sell because they were not doing well. And it was a bunch of doctors that had hired property managers and just never showed up. And we got it for $21,600 a door. Yeah. And our plans to put about $16,000 a door in. And then we're still deciding whether we're going to hold it long-term or sell it. But you know what? If we sell it, we figured we'd get $55, $60 a door. And if we hold it long-term, we figured we'll cash flow at above a 10 cap. So, you know, that's why it's kind of part of it depends on what our investors want to do at the time. When the time comes, we're still in the process of getting all the work done. But that's kind of where we are now. But in 2012, we had our first big deal. We bought 144 units in our province in northern Saskatchewan. And that one we raised investor capital for. And in 36 months, we had the investors totally paid out. The asset was increased like over $2 million. And we got a nice size payday. And we still hold that one to this day.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. That's one of the things that I've often wondered about this business is we hear about people buying apartment complexes and this is it's a 5-year plan. We're going to sell at the end of year five. Hey, I've got deals of our own, you know, that we're pumping out that look like that. But I've often wondered, you know, if the thing's making money, why are we selling the milk cow?
Yeah. The only time we consider selling is if we can do another BRR and make that lift in the meantime. Right. Most of our stuff, Sam, we've kept. Most of it we've kept. That's why, you know, and some of it depends on the investors. You know, we kind of, you know, get in and they think, well, they want out for a different reason. Sometimes it's age related. Sometimes it's just they find another opportunity, and we do have to let them be part of that decision at the time. A lot of it depends on that. But when we buy, we're generally planning a long-term buy and hold. And I mean, intergenerational, like we don't plan on ever selling. You know?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I love the way that you guys have grown that side of the business. So you started doing this, growing your business, having great success. You know, you're raising money from other investors. You guys are taking down assets, which is, you know, it's a pretty traditional path. At what point in time did you say, okay, I want to start teaching this to other people and why?
You know, almost immediately, we would go back to the conventions that the Kiyosaki Group had put on. They'd have an annual convention and we were inducted into Robert Kiyosaki's Hall of Fame 18 months in or whatever that time frame was, 2 years, somewhere around there. And people would say to me, how the heck did you grow so fast? So it started me thinking. And, you know, initially I thought, well, you know, I was a financial advisor. I was used to talking to people about money. And you probably can't do it. That was my first thought. Then I started thinking about it and I realized, you know what? I learned how to be a financial advisor. I used to be an office administration person. I learned all that. And then, so that was one thing. So it's just a learning curve. And the other thing, I found a lot of people getting stuck at about four doors. So they'd started, took in the class same time as us, but they got stuck at four doors. And the reason they got stuck is they were stepping over dollars to pick up dimes. They were property managing, fixing their own toilets, looking after the tenants. And at four, they were, there were so many of them stuck at that level that I went, okay, wow, that was something we did that, like, maybe not even intentionally, that all these people are not. We partnered with people who were a little bit more advanced with us. And that's what gave us the courage to keep going. We also hired a coach above and beyond the training part of the program who held our hand through the first few purchases that made it seem like it wasn't so scary and so out there. And that's kind of when the idea came to my mind is, you know, I could show people what we did. And so in 2007, I launched a coaching program. And now I realize that everything I ever did brought me to this part in my life. The favorite thing that I do all day long, I love helping students do what we did, and especially to take them from a non-believer to a believer when they're buying that first building within their first year and cash flowing $2,500, or, you know, I think the highest I've seen somebody do in 1 year is like $8,500 or 16 months, a little bit longer than a year. You know, it's just so gratifying and so fun to help people. I get as much of a kick out of it as, and even more nowadays, because I have a team that does most of the stuff, the day-to-day stuff. I get more of a kick going through that process with them than doing our own anymore.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. It's the giver's gain for you. So that's fantastic. What are some mistakes? What are some things, some missteps? I know you gave us one when talking to, you know, people as to how did you grow so fast? And they're, you know, like you said, stepping over dollars to pick up dimes. But what are some things maybe that if you could do it differently or do it over again, that you would maybe avoid some time, or I guess maybe what are some mistakes you've run into over the years?
Getting out of my wheelhouse, Sam, was the biggest thing. So early on, we adopted the philosophy that we were always going to have managing partners. So we never did the day-to-day stuff. Our main job was raising capital and, you know, putting the financing in place and that sort of thing, maybe some book work, different stuff like that. But we didn't do the day-to-day management. Then I got greedy and I went, okay, I'm raising all the money for all these deals. Why don't I just do it and hire staff to do what those guys do? Oh my God. I bought two buildings like that and absolutely hated every part of it, hated dealing with property managers, because then I had to make all the decisions about the tenants and renovations and all that kind of stuff. Whereas before, my managing partners were looking after all that. It took us, we bought one, their first one like that in 2013. We just got rid of it last year. So it took us 7 years to get out of that. And the first 3 years, I maybe didn't mind it so much. Then I got to hate it. But it took us a while to get out of it. So I would say, like, stick in your wheelhouse with what you'd love to do. And I didn't, you know, I realized looking back. So, of course, you can only think about it looking back. We would have never done that.
Right. Yeah. Man, that's sound advice. Sound advice. Getting out of your wheelhouse. What's something else?
Well, you know, a couple of things happened to us that I don't think we could have avoided. One of our managing partners married somebody who we didn't end up getting along with at all. So a partnership that was awesome turned out to be not so awesome. We still own properties with them today. We just try to totally step back and let them go. Whereas that wasn't how it was set up in the first place. So, I guess, and you know, in some senses, the deals are really good. So we're just kind of letting them go. But maybe having some kind of an out, you know, that they can't come in and start taking over. Because really, if somebody came in, took over, who really did not have any experience. And next thing we know, he's like running the whole show and he's just got a really abrasive personality, you know. But I don't know if we can avoid that, because at the same sense, we wouldn't have what we had if we hadn't started down that route. So just, I think a thing to be aware of, be careful with your partners that you partner up. But I don't know that we could have avoided that. Cause like I said, the first couple that we dealt with, they were awesome. And it was just a marriage that, change things.
Right, right. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. It doesn't sound like that. That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Edna, I've certainly enjoyed this. Before we jump into the final four, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. No.
Wonderful. Final four questions are this.
Sure.
If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I would hire a coach and get some education.
Straightforward. Question number two. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Well, the classic example I gave you is stepping over dollars to pick up dimes. Do not try to do your own property management and do your toilets and, you know, dealing tenants and stuff. Unless you're happy with sticking with three or four properties for the rest of your life, because that will stunt your growth. If you want to scale to any level, you have to hire that part out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a building that we don't own that we have a lease on, for a different business altogether. And the owner of that building is in her 80s and she was out doing property maintenance at some condos she owns the other day. And I was just like, you're in your 80s. What are you doing? And yeah. Then she only owns a handful of them. But yeah, classic example of stunting your own growth, like still thinking that she's got to go out and do property maintenance in your 80s. Like, okay,
Maybe
not. Question number three, investing in the world. What's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
You know, I think what I'm doing is teaching people our path, like the mindset shifts that has to happen to go from studying how to be frugal and live within your means to studying wealth, I think is a huge thing that I'm sharing with the world. And just our success story, sharing that and showing people how they can do it too. Because you know what, Sam, I was a classic C student. I was good at socializing and, you know, the classes I liked. And other than that, not that good in school. Right. And a lot of people let that limit them and think that that's their glory days is high school. I'm so glad that high school was not my glory days.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've heard it said that most universities rely on their C students to, you know, write all the checks back in their 40s and 50s.
So you better be nice to them.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's the C students that are writing the big checks to the universities in support of them. So all the A students are still doing, you know, research in the department somewhere. So
that's working there probably.
Absolutely. And that's obviously a broad generalization. But anyway, maybe it makes the C students like you and me feel better. Who knows? Last question for you is this. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, Edna, what is the best way to do that?
Best way to do it. I know if you can see it behind my head for those people that are on video. My website's ednakeep.com. My email address is edna@ednakeep.com. And on Facebook and social media, I'm Coach Edna Keep. And reach out to me. I got lots of free stuff. And I have a free masterclass that if people want to really check out what it's going to take for them to do that five-year plan, I offer that as well.
Awesome. Edna, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sam. It was my pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.